People are going to hate this show, but I'm stoked about it.
Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, New York Knicks country. Welcome to Extra Time. I'm David Goss. Alongside me, Matt Doyle, the legend, the mustache, Tom Bogert's on vacation. Andrew Wiebe is currently doing his Grapes of Wrath thing and moving through the Midwest or something like that. So we've got a two-man show here today on a glorious NBA trade deadline day, but also a ton of MLS to talk about. We've got a lot of teams to preview. We will dig into all of it as we go along. We're going to preview six different clubs. We've got an interview with Hernan Losada coming up at the end of the show. We will break down two of the positions. And that was it. That was my Andrew Wiebe slash David Goss mashup. How's that feel?
Because we actually, in the pre-show meeting, we decided not to do the winger position as one giant thing. We decided to do right wingers and left wingers. And then we're doing center backs as well. So three positions, David.
I have reached out to a lot of people to help me like feedback on my positions. And the first response is always, why do you do it this way? Like, it needs to be direct winger, creative winger, you know, 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3 roles. Wingers.
Yeah.
And I have always had to answer with agreement and then realize we did, like, no one made us do this and no one gave us parameters. We decided this. And every time we're angry about it, I realize we're the problem.
Yeah, correct.
So we'll do it once again.
I should have yes-anded that, but all I had was yes.
Well, you can yes-and this. Get your MLS season pass. You can get all your content going into the season. We've talked a lot about some of the stuff that's up there. Get on there. Get on Apple TV. That way you can watch some of the background videos on some of these clubs. I talked about some of the stadiums. You can get virtual tours of via drone, and then you can go experience it in person in less than a month because the season kicks off very soon. And as I said, it is the NBA trade deadline. We will try to avoid it as much as possible. But first question from the mailbag. First time, long time. Can you go into detail about the pending Phoenix Suns first round exit? I'll hang up and listen. Shout out to Tom T posting dose.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns getting Philadelphia Union owner Kevin Durant.
Great tie-in, Doyle. That's a leak.
The big trade on Wednesday night. I think it makes them the best team in the West, specifically because, you know, that mid-range between KD, CP3, and Booker, those are the three best mid-range shooters in the league. And that's Denver's kryptonite because Joker, he can only defend in a drop. So that's real tough if you're a Denver fan, because I like looking at it 48 hours ago, I was like, Denver's going to the finals. But now it's Phoenix might beat him 4-0. Like,
so
it's that bad a matchup for Denver.
So would you take Kroenke Sports Denver Nuggets and trade Michael Porter Jr. and things to Maple Leaf Sports Toronto Raptors for Pascal Siakam? Lots of MLS tie-ins right now.
I would do that. I would actually do that. Like MPJ could end up being like a generational offensive talent, but Siakam's he's a more well-rounded player. He could also play small ball five in those minutes where Joker's not going to play. And I think it's just it's like the win now move. So it hurts a little bit because Denver's been so patient, but at some point you got to go all in. The question I would have from Siakam's point of view, he's always been a big TFC fan.
Yeah.
Would he change his allegiance to the Colorado Rapids?
So
that is the big question out of that
one. Were you at 2017 MLS Cup where he did
no,
we
I
do
was
something?
At 16. I was
it was
at
16.
Yeah.
Oh, you were at 16.
Yeah.
We did something with Pascal Siakam one of those 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know who Pascal Siakam was at the time, really.
I mean, he was like a rookie, like late first round draft pick.
But he's a soccer fan and he could juggle and whatever. So we do this thing and it kind of felt this whole like, oh, yeah, we just like picked the random guy we could do something with.
Yeah, and he'll be out of the league in a year.
Yeah.
But actually, he was an all-star.
And now I casually am like, oh, yeah, I like know Pascal Siakam. It's like not a big deal. But at the time, Patrick Patterson was the big deal because he had season tickets to TFC. He came to both finals. And he was a big deal on the Raptors as well. So that's a little bit. We'll go into this. We'll talk. There's a number of Josh Hart level moves that MLS clubs have made that we'll talk about as we get along. Let's continue, though, with our fan feedback, because Doyle asked specifically if it was just a two-person show to mainly have it fan-facing. So we have a lot of fan interaction to like lead this show off. And we have one from James on Twitter who said, just got to listen to Monday's episode. And firstly, I'm not a San Jose fan. Bash Brothers era, though. Secondly, I think I used the wrong word. I meant they should be contending for the playoffs and be a real soccer team again, not win the cup. Just wanted to clarify, because we, I think, heard his question and painted him as a pie in the sky San Jose fan, where he was like,
that's what it sounded like. But that could be Weeby's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we should all give blame on Andrew. So, James, it is noted. You have clarified. We respect that. But for the rest of time, I'm going to call you San Jose supporter, James. So watch out as you continue to message us. And then we have Jim, by the way, who we anointed a Philadelphia Union fan based off his Annapolis Northeast blue collar ties. Respect to Jim, because Jim, not to out him too much, reached out to the Philadelphia Union and said, I have been assigned your club by Extra Time. And do you guys have a welcome package? How do I get in? I'm all in. And we got that message forwarded as they thought it was a work assignment, I think, of like
a assignment
to cover the Philadelphia Union. So listen, Jim, find all the angles, find all the spaces you can. I'm in favor of swag. So if you can find some, I appreciate
it. I mean, you can't knock the hustle, right? Like, we did assign him the Philadelphia Union. So if you're Jim, you reach out to the union and you say, can I get some free stuff? Like, you don't know if you don't ask.
Jim, at Empire Goss, tweet at me. I will send you some Philadelphia Union stuff that I have because I need to purge my MLS stuff anyway. I'm overflowing right now from the last few years. So
you got to make room for the new Josh Hart jersey that you're going to have framed.
Obviously. Yeah. Well, I have to make room for the banners. Made the playoffs realistically top six seed in 2023. And we got one more here. So Matt/Simba on Twitter said, as good a time as any, newer fan looking for an MLS squad to support. So here's the background he gave us. He coaches his daughter's youth soccer team. He's become a Chelsea fan because of Christian Pulisic over the last few years. His sports fandom is Nebraska Cornhuskers, basketball and football, which has him comfortable with a non-dominant winning always team. I think that's probably more modern for Nebraska fans, but that's the little bit I know about this. And he has now gotten into Union Omaha. Do you have a team for Matt/Simba?
Well, I mean, first of all, you stick with Union Omaha, right? You support your local. It sounds like this guy's from, he must be from Omaha or from Nebraska at least. So stick with your local. Keep supporting Union Omaha. His nickname is Simba. So if you want an MLS team, it's got to be one of the Lion teams, right? Like, it's got to be like that's Simba's a character from The Lion King.
Are you asking me? Are you telling
me? I am.
Like, yeah, that, Simba is the main character.
The main character from The Lion King.
Lion King, which is the highest grossing entertainment product in history, I found out, by the way, because I went and saw Phantom of the Opera this week because it's closing. And Lion King, by combined movie and show and other products, is now the highest grossing entertainment product ahead of Phantom.
Wait, are you... That doesn't make sense to me.
Okay.
And I do not believe the research that you've done. It must have to be something around like Broadway specifically. But anyway, if his name is Simba and he has a local USL team, like if he was just like floating in the breeze and didn't have a local USL team, I'd say, oh, root for Sporting KC or root for, you know, Minnesota or root for St. Louis because those are the Midwestern teams. But those are the teams that Union Omaha is most likely to go up against in the US Open Cup. So I don't want to give him that. I say stick with one of the Lion teams for MLS. So that's either Orlando City, Cincinnati, or RSL. So instead of giving an assignment, we're going to give him a choice from those three teams. And like, you know, Orlando City, U.S. Open Cup champions last year. We're going to cover more in this show. They're a team that, like, if you're going to be a front runner, you probably want to get on that bandwagon now. For front runner bandwagon, Cincinnati's kind of left last year, but nobody's going to judge you too harshly if you're a Cincinnati fan in 2023, I don't think. And then RSL, I mean, that's a roller coaster. We every year we say with RSL, like we pick them 13th and they end up 7th somehow.
So here's my one pushback on this. I feel like Nebraska, like Cornhuskery stuff, is values legacy over production. Like Nebraska feels like a historic thing that isn't good anymore, but they are very into like the traditional.
Are you trying to make this man a DC United fan?
Or Chicago. Even though Chicago's not OG, right. They're closer than that.
98 is pretty OG.
Yeah. So Matt/Simba, let us know where you fall on the five teams we attempted to assign you. Anders would like to put the Galaxy in as legacy teams that struggle currently as well. Barcelona would probably agree with that in their own way. Let's get into the transfers then. Julian Araujo feels like we'll still be with MLS, although it sounds like Barcelona is going to put another push in to see if they can get the deal over the line. But the huge news is Giakoumakis, the center forward designated player that Atlanta United has been chasing for a while out of Celtic, has finally signed. So this is the second big signing of the week. Luis Abram as well making a signing. We're starting to see the Garth Lagerwey generation or project come to fruition. Doyle, what's your takeaway now that this deal's finally happened?
I mean, he's a rugged, true number nine. He, like, everywhere he's gone, he has scored goals in bunches. He finds a lot of chances. He's not a guy who's going to do it himself. He's based upon everything I've seen and, you know, the clips and scouting reports and the underlying numbers. Like, he just lives in the box. He finds chances. He puts a good amount of them away. He defends a little bit. Like, he's not Tati Castellanos or Maxi Arruti up there, but he doesn't need to be, I don't think. And he's not going to do much in terms of buildup other than a little bit of rugged hold-up play. And that's fine. If you look at the amount of money and resources that Atlanta have invested in that midfield over the past 4 years, like, the whole idea is the midfield should be so good that you just need a finisher in the box. And Giakoumakis, it seems like he fits the bill for that. And, like, given his goal scoring record in the Netherlands and in Scotland, I would be surprised if he was not, you know, about a 15 goal scorer in MLS. And, like, if I were to error in that prediction, I would probably take the over just because of what the eye test and the scouting reports and the underlying numbers say about him. It seems, which is to say, it seems like a really, really good signing. And he seems really into it too, because, and we were saying this in the pre-show, David, like, the last number nine that Atlanta had, who was not exactly a global household name, ended up earning $4 million a year. So I would be pretty excited about coming to this market as well.
And he basically has no competition at the position. Like, he will walk in, unless Machop Chal is really killing it in preseason at center forward, he will walk in alongside one of the least efficient wingers in MLS and have his opportunities. But this is, you know, he's going to play in front of Thiago Almada. This is the rebuild. Like, this is a roster that will not be there this year. I don't think we've done Atlanta yet. We'll get there, and they're one of the bigger question marks. But as you said, it feels like, nice, Anders can remind me what we've actually done on this show. It feels like the floor is pretty high with him of what you're going to get. And he's not going to be Raul Ruiz Diaz, but Garth has some experience building rosters where you have a true deadly finisher who doesn't add a ton more, and you start to build that around that. So it feels like this could be one of those rosters. And they just needed to close a move. Like, they just need to start adding pieces.
Like, it ends up being a really good offseason for them because of this move and because of Derek Etienne Jr. And it's the first time in forever that Atlanta's offseason is like, oh, we went for guys who are good soccer players and not just, like, have really great highlight reels set to, like, European dance music. We care more about goals and good movement off the ball than step overs, and let's sign guys with the first thing, goals and good movement off the ball. So, like, I really like this. I like the offseason that Atlanta have had. We'll get into that more once we do their their preview.
So one more news or one more transfer, and then we'll start to dig into our previews. It's the Jaden Nelson transfer to Rosenborg in Norway, which is, to me, an unfortunate move, I would say. So it sounds like the transfer fee is about roughly $1 million. Jaden Nelson, homegrown player for Toronto, pretty high acclaim, I think has struggled in MLS to bring the things to the field that he was expected of, which was 1v1 ability, chance creation, as well as goal scoring, but turned into a pretty high level utility player for them last year. Mm-hmm. And he had, it felt like the makings under Bob of the like Latif Blessing, Mark Anthony Kay, winger to central midfielder, high possession player. But when you look at TFC, this roster, it is top heavy, and he could have filled in for you at 3 to 4 positions for a consistent amount of time. But the bigger thing is this. When you look at MLS, and I just had a conversation with someone about this today, when you look at the way MLS has grown and the sophistication of clubs, TFC was a benchmark club in big signings. Atlanta took it to another level. The highest level of sophistication you can have right now is big signings and selling young players to bring in allocation money or selling players in general. TFC never took that second step. And this is another example of a high-profile youth player that couldn't find a spot. They couldn't find a way to appreciate his value or use him. And it's almost like they're saying, we will get more in a sell-on if he plays for Rosenborg than we can create ourselves. And it's like they're giving up on him. And that's okay every once in a while. But now we're down the road where it's every prospect.
Yeah.
Right? Schaffelberg, Petrasso, just gone because there's no space for them. Io, they've been shopping for how long? And they're going to keep telling us Shaquille Marshall-Ruddy is going to be the one. He's going to be the one. There is no proof that they have the ability to create a space for Shaquille Marshall-Ruddy to reach his ceiling, to at least be sold, not to be the player he will be because he's a teenager, but to be sold and to assist the club in building. And I think that's why if Toronto operates this way, even if they're great this year, they will always fall back into the down years because they don't have the process in place.
The pipeline.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Knicks, right? Like the fans are so bent on we have to compete. We have to make big name signings. It's win now, win now, win now, that you never get room to develop your young players.
You think it's on the fans or you're just trying to take a shot at the Knicks?
I do think it's on the fans. I think there's a lot of similarities between Toronto fans and New York fans in that sense. Yeah.
Two great cities.
Two amazing cities. I mean, right. I live in New York for a reason, but like the fan bases are notoriously impatient. And I'm not sure Toronto FC fans would have been that way, right? I think that Toronto FC fans would have liked to see Jaden Nelson get more playing time in positions where he could succeed over the past 2 years, and Petrasso given a chance at left back, and you know moves like that. But it hasn't happened. It is a real problem for them because they're not going to have a lot of depth this year. And with Nelson in particular, he was a revelation when he moved inside.
Yeah,
as that like sort of ball winning 8.5, 8, 10, whatever you want to call it. He really struggled on the wing last year, but once they moved him inside, like he looked like Latif Blessing with more skill on the ball. And like to that point, neither of us, I don't think, would be surprised if he was sold to like Feyenoord in 18 months for $10 million. He is that level of talent. And obviously, Toronto have a sell-on, so that would work out for mm-hmm. them. But it needs to start if TFC is going to be the type of team that their ambition says they should be, it needs to be more than just signing Insigne and Bernardeschi. They or making moves for guys who are proven at like Brøndby or wherever. Like they need to start that pipeline from within, and they need to open it up and get it like wrenched open and staying open, because there's like Kalen should be here for this. There's so much talent in Toronto.
That's,
and it all funnels into the TFC Academy.
Well, it does.
And they have not, well, that's the thing. Yeah. They haven't gotten enough out of that for given how much they've put in terms of resources.
Yeah. And that's where, okay, build your club the way you want to. the frustration is that Alistair Johnston and Tajon Buchanan and Kyle Larin are going for multi-million dollars. They are all Toronto area players that never touched TFC, and TFC won't get any reward for, and they have gotten better at recruiting those players in, but now they are struggling to produce them as players and giving them an opportunity. And so now they're moving on. That's where the frustration comes with TFC, which is, okay, if that's not the model of your club, it's not the model of your club. But we had the same conversation with the Sounders, which is, if you want to be able to continue to succeed in MLS, you have to, one, have the players, but two, have the allocation money for selling those players.
Yep.
And that's the way you continue to be successful at a first team level, I think, which is what we've seen with LAFC. Even in a short time, they turn over so much money that they can continue to add quality players every time they lose someone. And I know they had 1 year where they fell off, but it feels like they're going to continue to maintain a high level. All right. Somehow we worked LAFC into this conversation. So shout out to that. That was an homage to Weeby. Not LA Galaxy, but close enough with LAFC. Minnesota signing a center back as well, but we're going to preview Minnesota in just a moment. So let's dig into our team previews. Anders, put the clock on for whatever amount of time you put the clock on. And let's start with Orlando City. Last year, they finished on 48 points, seventh in the Eastern Conference. Remember, they got in after beating Columbus at home on decision day to jump Columbus into the final spot in the playoffs. They went and lost to Montreal in the opening round of the postseason, but they did win the U.S. Open Cup, the first trophy in the club's history. So they will play in CCL this year. Since then, massive turnover for them. Junior Urso gone, João Moutinho gone, Tesho retires, Juan traded, Benji Michel has gone to Portugal. They've brought in a number of players, though, at the same time. Rafael Santos signed, an Icelandic central midfielder that I'm not going to try right now.
Lagerden.
There you go. Martin Ojeda, which was their big designated player signing. Duncan, as Anders put it in here, the Highlander Maguire. And all of that doesn't include, I believe, Gaston Gonzalez, who was a big signing for them at the transfer window last year in the summer and immediately was injured, tore his ACL like a day before he arrived. And he is expected to play this year as well. I wasn't on the show when it happened, but Weeby and Tom have continually anointed this as the best offseason in MLS this year. Doyle, do you agree?
It looks like it. It looks like they've won the offseason on paper because they've been able to remake the team while keeping what I think we all agreed was a really good core, right? Like Cesar Aruja is still there at D-mid, and he was one of the best young D-mids and one of the best D-mids period in the league last year. They kept Mauricio Pereira, who's a really good player, but they got him off that DP slot, and that freed them up to go out and add Martin Ojeda, who has been just lights out in preseason and was great last year in Argentina. You know, Facu Torres, like I'm not the biggest Facu Torres fan in the world, but like he ended up being very good down the stretch last year, and it's reasonable to expect even more of him in year two. They finally addressed left back in multiple ways. Like one of the Toronto kids we were talking about, Luca Petresso, they went out and they got him in November, and then they added Rafael Santos from Cruzeiro in January. They added another U22 kid in Ramiro Enrique, who could play all along that front line. And then, like, they went ham in the draft, man. Like, they got the number two overall pick in Shaq Muhammad, who, like, was one of the very best players in college soccer last year, can play right wing, left wing, and as a number 10. And then they traded up to number six to get Duncan Maguire, who, you know, he won the Herman Trophy last year. He's a big center forward, about 6 foot two.
He's a Creighton guy.
Creighton guy. I think he had 23 goals in 22 games.
Which so is he, for Simba, who's a clearly Omaha relevant, this is another draw to Orlando City.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah. But he had like one of the best goal scoring seasons in college soccer in the past quarter century. And like it's college soccer, so you take it with a grain of salt. But you watch the way this guy plays and his box movement, it's like Brandon Vasquez level. Like he's throwing double moves in there, and then he has the size and athleticism to finish the plays off against, you know, MLS caliber defenders, and he's showing it already in preseason. Like I think there's a non-zero chance this kid beats out Erkan Kara, who's literally a DP for the starting job
And it would be, you mentioned Romario Enrique as well. So he would beat out an under 22 and a DP player.
Yeah. But the point is, even if he doesn't, like, he's in the mix now, and Carr is in the mix. And so they have depth in these spots. They went out, you know, making a good signing like Felipe at defensive midfield. They have Wilder Cartagena, who was kind of under the radar. They brought him in late last year. They were able to keep him. They were able to keep Angulo, who was one of the better defensive wingers in the league last year. They have him playing as a right wing back in preseason, because Oscar Pereja, he's messing around with like a 3-4-2-1, because it gets Facu Torres and Ojeda, it gets them on the ball in the attack in better spots. Like, they just so clearly had a vision for what they wanted to do. And in this offseason, and then they executed it, not just across like one player acquisition device, but basically every player acquisition device.
Yeah.
Draft, free agent, TP signing, U22 signing. I don't think they made any trades, but that's maybe the only box they haven't checked. And now,
well, they traded for Luca Petrasso.
Well, there you go. So trades as well. And now they look on paper it's tough to say, because a couple of the big pieces aren't proven, and because there are still injury concerns with both Antonio Carlos and Robin Jansen, both of whom are getting a little bit older. But they look on paper, other than the Union, they look to me like the class of the Eastern Conference. And that's a good offseason for a team that was struggling to make the playoffs last year.
So I think my big question marks you just mentioned at the end, Robin Jansen, 30-plus foot surgery at the end of last year, missed the postseason. Yeah. Antonio Carlos missed about 4 to 5 months with an injury last year. Together at their prime, and we'll talk about center backs at the end of this show, they are one of the best pairings in MLS. It's a question mark, right? Guys at that age with injuries, you don't know. Now, one of the things you mentioned through all that is this is one of the deeper teams in MLS. Rodrigo Schlegel is one of the better backups. He's not, I don't think, starter level. He's one of the better backups in Major League Soccer. Ivan Angulo gives you depth at those attacking winger spots. You talked about the center forward depth. You know, even Felipe gives you depth at central midfield. So it feels like a deep team, but it is a team that needs to gel on the fly with some younger foreign players, which has been up and down in MLS history. This feels an easy one to me to start with. The BetMGM odds have them 11th in the Eastern Conference odds.
Really?
To get to MLS Cup. Yes. My assumption is, with the amount of turnover, include like losing starters from a seventh place team, that the odds makers see that as, you know,
well,
is questionable. But
this is the easiest over that we've done.
Yes,
right.
So now,
Let me set it for you.
No. I don't want to do it. You do it because you're high on them. I'm gonna set it at 4.5.
Yeah, I think this team's getting a home game.
Okay, so you think they're top four in the East?
I do, yeah. I mean, that could change, right? Like NYCFC haven't made their moves yet. The Red Bulls are really good. Obviously, you know, Philly's up there. If Toronto stay healthy the whole season, Toronto could be nails. I think Columbus could end up being really good. Cincinnati. But this team's really good. I think it's a top four team in the Eastern Conference. And it needs to be said,
Orlando fans.
Yeah. Oscar Pereja remains one of the best coaches in the league. And I know that the team didn't play like it a ton last year, but I think his hands were tied by a lot of mismatched pieces. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like the pieces are mismatched this year. I think this team is going to use the ball more, and they're going to look more like they did in summer of 2020 during the MLS's back tournament, where they weren't just playing winning soccer, but they were we basically watched every game together, David, because it was look at what they are doing in this game. It was that kind of team. And I think it has a chance for the first time since then to be that kind of team again.
All right, Orlando fans, celebrate. This is your moment. Anders would like us to mention we're not financial advisors, so do what you want with the odds. This is just us talking about it, but 11th feels like one of the biggest mismatches of what we've seen from what this roster could be. Could have some fun young homegrowns, by the way, just on that. Fabian Loyola got signed. He's one of the higher
thought Tommy of prospects.
Tommy Williams at center back. Yep. He was on the team last year. He was a little bit out of his depth last year, but especially if they go to a three, right? If they go to that 3-4-2-1, he could play real minutes, and he has a lot of tools. And we've seen throughout his MLS career that Pareja knows how to develop young players.
And Alex Freeman's the other big one, one of the highest prospect right backs. Right wing back's probably the correct role.
Do
for
we
him.
Think that he's ahead of Halliday? Michael
no,
Halliday,
but his
the other home
but run? His potential is way higher. Okay. And over, if you assume CCL, Leagues Cup, you yeah. assume they put something into Open Cup because they are reigning champions. You probably have enough time to get him on the field, and I think he's one of those players where you find his deficiencies, you see how good his skills are at that level, and you probably can shape a game around him a little if he can do the things I think he can at the MLS level. We will see. It's going to be an interesting year.
Before I let you move on from this, are they going to get past Tigres in CCL?
Always the optimist, of course. Of course they are. I will say Orlando and CCL is one of the fun ones. Like, they should be a CCL club hosting a game. It just feels like it'll be a good atmosphere with them. And obviously, Pareja's connection to Liga MX and all the other pieces in this team. Let's move to Houston, a team that won't be in CCL this year. They finished 13th last year in their conference on 36 points. They have had a pretty substantial offseason. Not with a lot of work to be able to do. They obviously changed over coaches through in the middle of last year, and then they permanently hired Ben Olsen in the offseason, who, by the way, I was doing the research. Ben Olsen's only 45 years old.
Yeah, he's younger than me, dude.
He coached at such a young age, but he's the, like, people connect him to the old generation of coaching in MLS, and he's one of the younger ones in Major League Soccer on the field. They could have 4 to 5 new starters. Arter, one of the biggest additions they made, bringing him in from Columbus, where, of course, Pat Onstad worked and operated and knows him very well. They brought in a couple attacking players, Ivan Franco and Amin Bassi, Achara as well, who, when healthy, is amazing and is never healthy. And then two starting fullbacks in Brad Smith from DC United and Franco Escobar, who's won like a zillion trophies in Major League Soccer. He's like pushing the Robert Ori thing of like, he's going to be random, but he will leave with 14 MLS US soccer based trophies in the end after Atlanta and LAFC.
It's like Todd Donovan. He's the right back version of Todd Donovan. Todd Donovan won everything as an MLS player.
Except he at least played in finals. I don't think Franco Escobar played last year for LAFC in the final, and he gets another trophy, but he did for Atlanta, I guess, throughout that time. Does Atlanta get a second Open Cup for the year that Open Cup didn't happen and they retained it? Because that would add another one to Franco Escobar. A couple big departures for Houston. Tim Parker, obviously traded. It was expected. I literally said he's going to get traded to St. Louis, so I felt very good about that one. Adam Lundqvist, Fafa Pico as well, Darwin Quintero out, and we know Memo Rodriguez left in free agency to head to the LA Galaxy. Let's start this one off for Houston, which is, we're not going to talk about MLS Cup. I think that's fair for them and everyone around it. That's not the conversation, but it's Ben Olsen in year one, Pat Onstad having time to get the club sort of under his belt and get some idea of what he wants to build. I think at the end of this year, there has to be a clear idea of how pieces fit into this team. And I think this should be a club that you can have a similar conversation next offseason that you just did with Orlando, which is, well, now I know how they want to play. And so the pieces they've brought in will fit and increase quality in positions that they didn't have last year, but you could see what they were going for, where right now you can't say that. Right now, the whole conversation is like, can they be coherent? And will they have starting level players at every position? I think the goal for them should be playoff race so that you have that excitement and entertainment and your fans can sort of come back into things. But really what we hoped last year would be, which is a reset of the club to say in the offseason next year, this is the Houston Dynamo. Does that feel okay?
Yeah. I mean, that feels like exactly it. And baked into that, like, if you're going to say it hinges on two things, I think one is Ben Olsen's development as a coach, right? Like, he coached DC United for 10 years during a time when he did not have much in the way of resources. And for a good long while, really the first half of his tenure, it would be 1 year on, 1 year off, where they would be competitive. The next year they'd take a step back. They would add a couple of veterans. They would, you know, get the locker room right, and they would be competitive and scrappy again. You know, they caused some problems in the playoffs. They won an Open Cup with like a truly miserable team in 2013. So he was able to get that buy-in, but then the TAM era hit. 2015, really 2016, and other than that Lucharoo run, it's like Weeby's on the show. Other than that Lucharoo run in the second half of 2018, like they were never a fun or competitive team again. And like, so he has a reputation as a coach who it does not have, you know, is not going to coax sort of a high-end tactical, you know, really intricate approach out of his team, but he gets his guys to play. The question is, can he keep the second part, get your guys to play, but add a little bit more tactically? Because we're at a point as a league where the best teams in the league play like really good identifiable soccer. And I think the argument for Ben Olsen is like in DC, he just never had the horses to do that. They never gave him the type of talent. And I'm not sure that this Dynamo team has that type of talent relative to the rest of the league either, but it has some, you know? And so we need to see development from Ben Olsen. Like, is this team consistently generating chances? If not necessarily from possession, but maybe a little bit of counter pressing, you know, can we see those third man runs from Coco Carrasquilla? Do you have the patterns to make that actually a weapon? Because he's going to play as a 10. He's not actually a 10. He'll be more of a box arriver, like getting in there to add the third man runs to get on the end of surface from either of the wingers. Like, we need to see that. And then the other thing we need to see is like, is Artur broken? Like, cause Artur,
that's who you went with.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Of the midfielders on this club that you're asking, are they broken? You started with Artur.
Yeah. Cause he's the one who's the defensive midfielder. He's the only one who's going to win the ball back, David.
No, I don't disagree with you, but I think the first question is Ace broken.
My issue with Ace is like, I don't think that's a question anymore. Like, he made that team significantly worse last year, in spite of all his skill. And he could still ping a diagonal like no other central midfielder in MLS. But, like, he was a pylon. And he's at the age where I think
he's just going to be a passer.
Yeah. So I think Artur is going to need to run for two. And that, like, 3 years ago, he was able to do that. He did not look like the same guy last year.
Now, I will say for Columbus, I looked it up at some point late in the year. The off-on numbers of like them pressing, winning the ball back, all those things, when he was on the field was better than when he was off. So he brought a level of that back to Columbus from 2 years ago when he was out with the knee injury the whole season. Now, is it enough to cover Ace and Coco Carrasquilla? That I'm not sure. And I think that's a fair question and a fair point. But I do think the record signing face of the franchise, he's going to be our Craig Biggio or whatever type guy in the Mexican international, probably has to step up and lead this club to an extent as well. The pieces, I think, make sense and fit together. The problem for where Houston sits, and let's go into the odds, which is 12th in the West, is their gambles. Houston doesn't have enough cap flexibility to get guarantees. They can't go out and get a Paul Arriola, right? Or some of these other more defined pieces that clubs have gotten. So like Ivan Franco and Amin Basse are gambles. Will they fit? Will it be this year? But if they hit, that's a pretty high level. Brad Smith and Franco Escobar are both gambles on injury. You know, the quality can be there in MLS. They were both hurt.
Yeah.
For Brad Smith all of last year, for Franco Escobar some. So 12th place in the West. How do you feel?
I think that feels about right.
Okay.
Yeah. You?
I'm going to go the same.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful, and I will say we are going off the same report everyone else is that came out in The Athletic, that it might be 9 playoff teams this year. My hope would be they can stay relevant in that conversation with everything you talked about, which is Ben Olsen kept teams that shouldn't have been competitive. And if you can bring some level of that to this club and they can play hard and have the home field advantage of playing in Houston throughout all the summer, I would hope that they're able to at least stay in that race. And then the hope is at the end of all of it that they have what we said, which is clear identity, a clear path forward. I would throw in, clearly I'm going to do this on every team, I'm excited about the youth development there. They brought in Brendan Burke from Colorado Springs, who was the one in Philly that connected the academy to the first team through Bethlehem Steel that Brendan Aronson, Mark McKenzie, and all the other players came through and then was successful at Colorado Springs. So I'm hopeful for that, as well as some of the pieces they've added to their academy staff going forward. Also, Aurelian Collin is an assistant coach on this team, which is just must watch stuff. Aurelian Collin's like an epic entertainer in MLS history.
I hear nothing but good things about working with Aurelian Collin. A lot of energy.
Yeah. And good looking guy. Good, fat, very fashionable. So we'll bring that part of it.
I like his hair.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big fan of what he does with this stuff. Let's stick in Texas. Doyle, let's go to FC Dallas. Finished third in the West last year. Lost in the conference semifinals to Austin. They had a pretty big offseason, maybe more in departures than in arrivals. Frank O'Hara is out. Matt Hedges has left, who has been a club legend, and I assume will go into their Hall of Fame when he does retire based off the career he had for them. And then Nanu, the other one, which a little bit less important. And then the pieces they've brought in, Sebastian Ibiaga for center back depth, and Giovanni Jesus, which should solve the right back spot they've been working on since Reggie Cannon left, over and over again. And then Jose Mulato, who is a high-level Colombian prospect that scored a ton of goals for North Texas SC last year. The big question for them is, I think, internal improvement, Doyle. Nico Estevez, year two, his sophomore season, Jesus Ferreira as the center forward, Areola there, Velasco a year in. Can they take a step forward?
Yeah, I don't want to undersell the Hedges departure, right? Because that, like, we've seen repeatedly that MLS center backs in their prime, and to be fair, Hedges is at the tail end of his prime, or has maybe even moved out of it, but like those guys are nearly irreplaceable. So I was surprised they didn't hang on to him, especially because defensively they were so good last year with 37 goals allowed. And that brings us to, can they improve in year two? A lot of the reason they were good, so good defensively last year, like, yeah, Hedges was really good, and I thought Martinez had a pretty good year in center back, and Martin Paz was, you know, very good goalkeeper, but a lot of it was Nico Estevez's system. Mm-hmm. And, I'm going to mention the U.S. national team here. If you think back to the defensive performance during the World Cup, it was because the way the system is designed is, okay, you get into the attacking third in your attacking shape so that when you lose the ball, and it's soccer, so inevitably you're going to lose the ball much more often than you finish a sequence off with the ball in the back of the net. When you lose the ball, everybody is in spots to win it back. And then you repeat the cycle. You make sure you're in your shape. You're very deliberate about it. And I thought Dallas were more committed to that than any other team in the league last year, even more so than Philly, who, of course, gave up only 26 goals, one of the greatest defensive teams in league history. That came with a sacrifice in terms of dynamism, specifically in releasing the central midfielders, Pomacall and Legette, Cervenia when he played, Sabaling when he played, releasing them into the attack and creating the types of overloads in the box, the chances that you have to take in terms of the position of your team in order to create chances. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that often. It got better when Legette got there, but it did not happen often enough. I thought they sort of erred too much on the side of being safe.
So one question that I have in here is, one of the solutions to that could be having an elite defensive midfielder. I don't think anyone would be confused thinking Facundo Quiñon would be that. They do have a DP spot open.
Yeah.
Is that a necessity for them, or do you think they can improve without that? Do you think they use it on that spot? Like, how do you think they handle? Obviously, Carlos Correa just came back into the league as a DP. That's not going to be the move they make, but that would be in sort of the vein it would look like.
Right. Like, wouldn't Jackson Mendes be great in that spot? Like, yeah. It's not going to happen. He's done. Did he sign Gremio?
Sao Paulo.
Okay. Yeah. So that's not going to happen.
One of the S's.
But, yeah. But like that type of player who's a hard man ball winner, but also a ball progressor who could release the eights further upfield. Yeah. I mean, that's where I would spend it. At the same time, I wouldn't be in a rush to spend it because I have to admit, I'm still not convinced that Jesus Ferreira is a number nine. Even in this system, I'm not convinced that that is his best position. I think there's a non-zero chance that you're looking at, you know, you're looking at Dallas midseason thinking, man, maybe we should just go to a 4-2-3-1 the way Austin play and put Ferreira in the Drewsy role and get a true number nine to play off of that.
And drop one of Pomacol or Leggett from the starting lineup if they're healthy.
I think so. Or maybe even say, you know what? Pomacol's lost the amount of range he needs to be an elite number eight. Maybe he's our sit and spray and orchestrate number six. Maybe that's his future as a player. Like, I think all those things are still in play for this Dallas team. But like, whether it's a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 or even a 3-4-2-1, because you could talk me into that as well, though I'm not sure there's room for Velasco and Areola if you're playing a 3-4-2-1. But anyway, mm-hmm. The path forward for them is more dynamism, more like just raw counting stats, man, more goals and assists from the guys in the middle of the park.
It feels like Leggett brought that. I think you said that already of like,
yeah.
he was a late, he kind of found the LA Galaxy top form of like late arriving box goal scorer a bit, also can help facilitate things the final third. A lot of it's going to have to come from internal improvement from Alan Velasco. He's their record signing, I believe, if not up there. I don't remember how much Dennelson came for back.
Velasco was more. Velasco was more.
Okay. That needs to come. And this is the Goss theorem. Like, it should, right? There's a young guy who came to this country for the first time and already started. He should improve. Your hope then is Jesus Ferreira can be a creator for Paul Areola, Sebastian Leggett, and Alan Velasco consistently, and maybe Hadar Obregon can score a goal here or there with this team. So the odds have them fifth to get out of the Western Conference. As I said, they finished third last year. Where do you fall on that?
My gut says fifth is about right. But yeah. given that they were third last year, given that they probably do have a little bit more depth, and we should see just individually a step forward from Velasco, and they should have, like, right back should be an upgrade because they struggled at right back last year. I'll say they finished better than fifth.
Yeah, I'm gonna say over too, because over I think means fifth also counts. I think they'll be fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
A lot hinges on Nkosi Tafari or Sebastian Ibiaga. I like Tafari. I think when you talk to people in MLS last year, he was one of the if we had to go get a starter from another team, mm-hmm. he's the next guy up. He's viewed by a lot of people. He played better 2 years ago than he did last year. I think there's belief there. There's also a weird thing here where Justin Che is going to come back in June.
Yeah,
I doubt he wants to be in Dallas. I don't think they really think he needs to be there. Like, there's clear an idea to sell him, but center back's a hole, and he arrives.
He's not a center back, man.
You don't think so at all?
No. Like, if he is a center back, it's 3 years from now. It's not now. Okay. Like, even in Germany, for the youth teams with Hoffenheim, they have him playing as a winger because he just does not know how to defend. Like, he's his footwork is a mess. His recognition. Like, he, at this point in his career, is not a center. You could talk me into him being a really high-level right back.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has that in him. But even that would be like the Brian Reynolds thing where it's like, oh, man, this guy's dynamite going forward. And just like don't pay attention to what happens when they lose the ball and he has to get back in defensive shape because like that does not happen.
This is Dallas, man. They don't play defense in Dallas. They just traded for Kyrie Irving. No one plays D. It's all about offense in Dallas.
Yeah, are we going to talk about the Celtics' big Mike Muscala trade?
You texted they acquired a giant white guy, and I was like racking my brain. And when I opened it up to see it was Mike Muscala, I laughed in my head because Mike Muscala would play for the Celtics. That was the guy who was born to play for the Celtics. Let's keep rolling on. We're going to go back to the Eastern Conference. We're going to talk New York Red Bulls here. Lost in the first round of the playoffs last year on 53 points, a home game. They were fourth in the Eastern Conference. They are like polar opposites of Orlando, which is they pretty much stood pat. And I think that's their strength outside of Dante Van Zier, who is, they're hoping, going to be an elite attacking goal scorer that they've been looking for since Bradley Wright Phillips left. When you look at moves they've made, they secured Elias Manoel to come back and be their center forward. I don't know until Van Zier arrives, or they weren't sure that Van Zier would happen. They also added Corey.
They're going to play with a two.
So we had this conversation. They added Corey Burke, Peter Stroud, we've talked about a lot, Kyle Duncan coming back. Aaron Long and Patrick Klamala have left. Klamala obviously didn't work out. Aaron Long, a pretty big piece. You say they're going to play with a two.
I think so, yeah.
So then where does Lewis Morgan and Luquinhas go?
So in Lewis Morgan inverted on the left, Luquinhas inverted on the right, right? Because the goal
for... You think it's a
4-4-2? 4-2-2-2. That's the Red Bull. That's the original Red Bull system
that like has there. Let me just point out, never worked in Major League Soccer. But continue.
I agree. But like they have tried it a half dozen times. They're going to continue to try it. You don't go out and bring in three forwards if you're only going to play with one up top. Now, it might end up looking a little bit like a 4-4-1-1 with Van Zier sort of floating underneath. He's not going to do Hani Mukhtar things where he's getting on the ball and you know, dribbling upfield. But he's good at finding spots to receive progressive passes. He can turn, and he does have a playmaking instinct as well, right? So he's a type of guy who's not, I don't think he's going to win a golden boot, but if he scored 12 goals and 7 assists, that wouldn't shock me at all. But like it's going to come, at least from the start, in the 4-2-2-2, I think. And part of that is also the one area, like I really like this offseason from the Red Bulls, in part because I love Corey Burke. I think bringing Manuel back on, you know, reportedly $1 million is what they had to pay for him. Like that seemed like a very good investment to me. And like Van Zier seems to check the box. It's like, that's a good offseason. Getting Stroud, who we've talked about, like that seems good. But keeping John Tolkien.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't sell John Tolkien. They were able to bring Kyle Duncan back. Like they had a very, I think, very good offseason. The one area where you're left scratching your head a little bit is center back, because they still have Sean Nealis and they still have Andres Reyes. Reyes is great, like defender of the year potential if he can play 2,500 minutes. He played 800 last year. And then behind them, it's just question marks. So, you know, Hassan Endom for the sixth time in 7 years, and Matt Nosita, who is how tall?
6'8", 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah.
Yes.
Future
Boston Celtic, Matt Nosita.
the reason that I think they're going to play a four at the back instead of the 3-4-2-1, which is what Struber has done the past couple of years, is because they only have those four center backs at this point. You can't put three of them on the field every game. They'll die. You know, so it seems to be pointed in that direction. And it feels like they gave themselves the chance to actually execute it this year. And then on top of it, because Bento Estrella is probably ready to start playing minutes, because they've done so well with Caceres and Stroud and Edelman, they can maybe trade Frankie Amaya, get some help as well. So they're like, or Drew Yearwood, you know, one of those two guys I think could be on the block. So they put themselves in a position where they could finally play the way that, you know, Ralph Ragnick wrote it down 15 years ago as a blueprint. And we know that Gerhard Struber is a true believer of that. And have flexibility to go out and make additions within the league and without. And one more point I want to make. This is because they finally acted in the way that their fans were asking them to in terms of buying out Patrick Kamala, who was clearly not going to work, and then replacing him with what is in theory an even better player in Vansier.
Yeah, that is a big move for them. And as you said, they have depth in spots. If you're a team in MLS that needs central midfield support, like this is where you're coming shopping. You're going to try at least. I don't know how many of them the Red Bulls will give up because some of these guys have sell on value where they might just sell and then keep the rest of right. They could sell Casares overseas and then just keep the rest of them around. I don't know that Gerhard Struber's ever won a game in MLS playing a back four. And on the 4-2-2-2, this goes back to Gonzalo Verón. Like, that's how far this goes back with New York Red Bulls. Of this has been the idea almost every season for Jesse Marsh to reset was to at the 4-2-2, and it has never worked for them. And that's where my question mark sort of falls with them. But take that away, if they don't play that way, I still like this team. Like, we kind of glossed over it. Andres Reyes has great potential. Sean Nealis has been one of the most steady center backs in Major League Soccer with a ton going on around him over the last few years. Carlos Coronel has been one of the better goalkeepers. They have that depth. Their expectation is Serge Gomez as well could take a step this year. He was fantastic last year when he wasn't injured. They have Omir Fernandez. Like, they have a lot of pieces in a league where the question with Orlando is, well, will it gel? Fit? How long will it take? I think Columbus is going to be a similar space. There are a lot of teams that it might take a while. If the Red Bulls do what they did last year, which is stack points early because they are a cohesive roster that knows each other well, that puts them in a really strong spot going down the rest of the season. So the odds have them at fourth in the East, which is where they finished last year. Where do you fall on that?
I would say over, because over includes four.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Well, so. We decided that this episode, but I'm pretty sure it did.
Yeah. Over.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think they'll have a
game. I don't know if we'll go into the postseason saying this is one of the four best teams in the Eastern Conference. This is one of the four teams with the best chance to win MLS Cup, because we don't know if Luquinhas is going to be a guy. And like, you have to have a number 10 who's a guy if you're going to win MLS Cup. You don't know. We don't know if Vansier is going to be that good. But so it could end up being the same old thing for the Red Bulls, where they're a really good regular season team and then don't have enough high-end, top-end quality for the playoffs. But that's not what the exercise is. The exercise is regular season. I think this is a top four team in the East in the regular season.
I think we both have enough experience with Red Bull fans that this feels like a year in which the potential that those two guys could be it exists, whether it happens or not. Where in the past few years, those players didn't exist on the roster, and it was there was no hope that it could happen. And I think that's exciting for Red Bulls fans, while still sticking the fundamentals of like Edelman and Tolkien could be locked in starters, you know, push for awards, stuff like that. So I think it's a pretty exciting year for the New York Red Bulls. Let's go back to the West of Minnesota here. They lost to FC Dallas in the playoffs. They finished sixth in the West on 48 points. They've had an interesting offseason. Daniel Henry's come in, Mikel Marquez, as well as Miguel Tapias, who's the center back that they just signed earlier this week that I mentioned in the transfer segment. Tapias comes with a pretty big resume from Pachuca. They played against him, is what Adrian Heath said, and he was really impressed by him. Those are all pretty much to fill Bakai Debassi's spot, who we don't know when he will return from injury, and this team cratered when he got injured, I believe in the middle of August. I don't think they held a shutout for like a month and a half or 2 months after that. And I don't know that they won a game as well. Offseason departures, Roman Mentaner, the injury to DeBassi, but pretty much the starting question every Minnesota fan has emailed us, tweeted at us, DM'd us, and wants us to start with is, what's going on with Emmanuel Reynoso? And more to the point, what could this team be if Reynoso is not a part of the team? He has not arrived to preseason camp. He has not been with the team in 2023. He's still in Argentina. Everything's been pretty murky in terms of why, how long, what's going on. The club won't really say anything specific, but they have not stated, guaranteed, an arrival date. So let's start with, what is this team without him?
It's not much. The whole idea for how Minnesota play, it's like Houston Dynamo owner James Harden with the Rockets when it was that heliocentric attack. I thought that would get a laugh out of you, David. Come on, I tied it together.
Sorry.
Sixers right now standing pat at the trade deadline. Where, look, everything flows, everything in the attacking third flows through Reynoso. He, according to American Soccer Analysis, he had 26% of their touches in the final third last year, which is like absurdly high. Mm-hmm. I think next highest was Carlos Hill with like 22%, and that was all time a top 10 mark. Like what Reynoso did was far and away the highest percentage of touches in the attacking third of any player in the American Soccer Analysis database, which goes back 10 years. And that tells you, I think that is a stat that tells you everything there is to know about this team.
Yeah.
In how they play. It flows through the Genius number 10. It is designed to do that with players who are all complementary pieces who move off of him. It is the most heliocentric attack in MLS. And if there's no sun there, there's no ray, then it's not going to work.
Royals really fishing for one on this.
Anders is not happy with that one. What do you do? You put Robin Ludd there, and then you put Fragapane on one wing and Longwani on the other, or Mender Garcia, and you hope that Luis Amaria can score, 15 goals this year. Like that's not playoff stuff that we're talking about, no matter how much they've improved the defense. And that's assuming, by the way, that they have improved the defense, because Bekai Debassi was really, really mm-hmm. good last year before he got hurt.
And these signings, by the way, a few things. One, none of them are guarantees. Mikael Marquez was playing the second division in Sweden. Tapias is a 5'10 center back who plays left back half the time, coming to MLS for the first time. And Daniil Henry was cut from two rosters last year, got injured, didn't make the World Cup. So those aren't guarantees at all. Plus, on top of that, when you talk about Reynoso, I think you also have to point out Emmanuel Reynoso took, 18, 20 months for them to get done, because he is of a quality that's probably outside the normal realm that Minnesota United would be able to bring in. So you cannot assume that if Reynoso isn't there, they can flip him and bring in a Reynoso-level player. That's one of the things that's tough with this. And I think it's why you see Minnesota waiting and being okay to wait. Because you mentioned the way those numbers break down, he's arguably the most crucial player in the league to his team. And I don't think there's another one out there that Minnesota will get. And so they're kind of going to end up in this waiting game for him. And then, their identity shifts a lot. Now, Hassani Dotson will be back this year, which should help them. Mm-hmm. Ground coverage in central midfield, high quality player. That feels like a pretty big one for them to shift things. If a Ludd had to play in there, they probably go basically dual eights with him and Dotson and try and just create some havoc.
Would you do dual eights and Arriaga as a six?
I think so, yeah.
Well, Will Trapp's going to play.
Well, then you're not going dual eights because you're not having Will Trapp cover by himself behind two eights that are pushing up the field. And Roman Mentaner didn't play last year, but they don't really have the outlet from the fullbacks that they had.
But DJ Taylor was good last year.
He was not.
He has some unexplored upside. They also spent $400,000 on Benitez, who's all he is an attacker. Like he does not defend at all. So I'm not as concerned about the Metanera thing. It's just like none of this works. Like these are all guys who are acquired to be complementary pieces. And I thought that within that framework, the roster makes sense. But if there is no primary piece, then the complementary pieces, and we've seen it inside like multiple times, man. Like think about when Carlos Hill was hurt, was it back in 20 when Carlos Hill missed the season? Like the Revs were like just barely a playoff team. The next year he comes back and they're a 73-point supporter shield winning team. Like that is like I don't think that even with Reynoso, I don't think Minnesota's ceiling is that high. But like that's the gap we're talking about. With and without him, we're talking like a 25-point gap with or without this one player.
I think Darwin Quintero is a free agent right now.
So I don't think they would touch him with a 10-foot pole.
I don't think so.
I don't think any MLS team would touch Darwin at this point. He is a tough guy to have in any locker room, and not just for the coaches.
So the odds have them 7th in the Western Conference. As I said, they finished 6th last year. Do you have any confidence that this will be solved, or are you going to go under because you're betting that he doesn't play?
I think that what's going to happen is 10 days from now, he'll show up and he'll play 20 minutes in the first weekend and 35 minutes the second weekend, and he'll start and go, you know, 60 minutes the third weekend. Then they'll have the international break, and then we'll write some columns and do some podcasts about, like, oh, what's going on with Reynoso? Is he unhappy? And then he'll come back and he'll be a 90-minute player, and we'll have mostly forgotten about this story by the end of the year. That is my prediction for this. Okay. So I think 7th sounds about right. Maybe a little bit. I guess I would probably go over.
I'm going to go under because I think even if the things you say are true, I do think the back line's a big enough question mark that they still might not. So it feels like the safe odds are that they will be 8th and below based off the way last year ended, the moves they've made, and then the unknown uncertainty around the most important player on this team. All right, so that's Minnesota. Now we're going to have an actual expert on to talk about something. We're going to go to Montreal, and to do so, we're going to talk to the new head coach, the one who's going to try and put all the pieces back together, from one of the best teams in Major League Soccer last year, CAF Montreal head coach Hernan Losada. Hernan, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks to you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So I'm sure you're sick of this, but we got to start here because our fans have not heard from you in a little while. When you look back on DC, and before we get into Montreal, what do you look back and think, what went wrong, and maybe what have you learned or taken from that experience?
Well, it's a good question. I think DC United hired me to make a rebuild, to make a modernization of their organization. And that's why I arrived, because they needed a kind of an update after so many years with Ben Olsen, and after they really wanted to change a little bit the way of and the style of play. And I think we did it in a good way, having a very good first season, selling young players like Griffin Yao, Moses Neyman, and of course Kevin Paredes. Paul Arriola went also to Dallas in a record internal transfer fee. The first season we went short. We came short 1 point to make the playoff, unfortunately. But I think the style of play and the entertainment and mostly the offensive type of play that we wanted to play was always there, especially at home. We had one of the best records at home, and we were also one of the most scoring teams in MLS. So I think naturally my way of thinking didn't fit with the organization. And that's why I think was also the best to part ways the way we did it. But of course, it has to come from both ways. When you are not fully convinced about the things and the changes the coach wants to do, sooner or later, it's going to end up the way it ends up. And, of course, it was a beautiful experience for me, because from every experience, you learn a lot. For me, it was also the first time after 12, 13 years living in Belgium that I could compete in another league with another culture, different competition with all the traveling and et cetera, et cetera. That's why MLS is so exciting. From that point of view, of course, it was a learning process. There were a lot of new stuff for me. And also a good remark is that I arrived only with one assistant. And when you are only with two and you need to make different changes, it's a lot harder than when you arrive with a staff of 4 or 5 people. So, well, I think for the players, it was very excited to work in a different way. But sooner or later, I knew, unfortunately, it was going to end that way, because in many things we were not on the same page.
So why Montreal now? Why is Montreal the right spot for you in this adventure?
Well, first of all, because the philosophy of Olivier Renard and Vasily, the two people really in charge of all the recruitment, is very aligned with more an European mentality, closer to where I grew up and where I took all my courses and coaching diplomas. So it fits a lot more the way I want to play and my mentality. Also because it's a club and an organization who really likes to develop young players. I really like to work with young players, with academy players, to give them the game time, but not only the game, but the game time, only to development, the development and the progression. And also in our staff, there is a lot of more European mindset with people who has a straight link and a straight connection with Bologna. We have a goalkeeper's coach, we have a physical coach, we have an assistant coach, all coming from Italy. There is European people in the medical staff. So, well, when I arrived, a lot of things that I wanted to change in DC that they were not there in CF Montreal, they was already there, already settled. So the adaptation was a lot easier.
So let's talk about the job you have here. And I'm curious how you see it, because you just said it. It's different than DC. It's also unique in MLS, which is how good Montreal was last year, how many pieces have now left, though, and obviously the change for you. Is rebuilding the right term? Is changing and tweaking the right term? Is continuity the right term? What is your role? What sort of the job that you have in front of you?
It's all of that. Continuing with all the good things, making little changes and adaptations on the way I see football, playing sometimes a little bit more vertical, maybe having a little less risky on the build-up, being a little bit more solid defensive-wise, but at the same time trying to keep on having and scoring a lot of goals and creating goal opportunities. So it's a little bit of all that. And of course, the biggest challenge this year, it could be to replace all those important pieces that left, that as a club and organization, we really have to be proud of that. Every time you sell players to better competitions and you see them growing, well, it's something to be very proud of. But now, of course, it's up to us to try to replace that and to try to maintain or keep the level.
You mentioned that verticality. You're known for that direct attack, high pressing. Montreal was different in many ways last year. They were one of the high possession teams in MLS, as you said. How do you marry those? How do you find the space in between where your DNA and the club's DNA match?
No, look, I really like to have possession and to defend with the ball. There's nothing better than let the opponent run, especially when you are in front in the score, and to defend with the ball. But at the same time, I also want to give a purpose to my ball possession. I really like to have ball possession or to build up from behind with the idea of ending up in the box of the opponent and trying to create a scoring opportunity. That's the way I see soccer. So it's going to be interesting. And I don't want to take out all the nice position CF Montreal has last year, but I want to add a little bit more of verticality and also a little bit more of organization the moment we lose the ball.
In that verticality, is it a similar shape to what we saw last year in the 3-5-2?
It can be a little bit flexible in terms of by times two forwards, by time one forward and two offensive midfielders. I don't think we have the roster right now to play a back four, but I would like to have maybe one piece who give me the opportunity to play sometimes in a back four, or to maybe change during halftime if it's necessary to a back four instead of a back five or a back three. I think the more flexible you can be, the more you can surprise the opponent. But right now I see, like you mentioned, a back three with a mix of sometimes two forwards, sometimes one forward and more midfielders in the middle of the park.
One of the big questions we've gotten from fans, as we've said, we're going to talk about Montreal, is in replacement is Georgi Mihailović and Ismail Kone, sort of in the same conversation. Georgi was a one-man creative piece for Montreal for so much of last year. When he went down, Kone sort of replaced that. Is there a player like that on the roster, or is there another way to replace that production?
Well, I hope we have them. There are a few good projects in the academy and young players that are right now training with the first team. And maybe also a few players who didn't have enough game time last year because of the team doing so well. Mm-hmm. Well, now is their time to show up and to get that game time and also prove that they are a good replacement for the players they left. And sometimes it's not about replacing a player with another player. It's about the team. You have to keep a good balance, a good collective. And sometimes the performance of a team can replace a very good player like it was Mihailović or Kone or even Alisson as a right wing back. Mm-hmm. There are ways to replace those players. So let's hope the players with less game time last year can now show up, stand up and fulfill those gaps.
Are there any of the young players that fans should know their names that they should be excited about out of the academy?
Well, I don't want to put any pressure.
Okay, that's fair.
But without being from the academy, I think Matko will have more minutes. Sean Rea and Nathan Saliba will have more minutes. Rida Suhir will have more minutes. Hamed Hamdi, he will have to have also more minutes. Then you have Sunusi and Mason Toy. Well, they will have to show up and have more minutes. Though all those pieces didn't play much last season. And well, now we are preparing them physically, mentally, and also tactically to be ready for that challenge.
You mentioned Mason Toy. He's sort of a name that we've talked about a lot. We haven't seen a ton. As you said, last year was not good for him. Is he in a place to be the player that Montreal thought he could be when they brought him in on a big deal from Minnesota?
We'll see. Maybe it's too soon to say that. So far, during preseason, they are all progressing. I know they came from a long break, and we still have 2 weeks to keep on working. The most competitive friendlies are coming right now. So it's too soon to take conclusions. But of course, Mason and all the rest of the players that I mentioned, sooner or later, they will have the game time. With all the games we have, you also have a Gold Cup and qualifications, right, and a lot of international games. So there are moments that they will have to play. They all will play. So it's very important for me to give the attention to all of them and to make sure that when they have the possibility to play, that they are ready for it.
One of the big stories last year, and then obviously coming in to training camp, was Kai Kamara. Great last year, and then seems to be a bit of a disconnect in terms of the relationship. How has it been so far with him? Personally for you?
No, the relationship with me, it's great. It's great with all the players so far. Everything what happened with Kai last season and during the break is not up to me. It's between Kai and the club, and it's up to them to find a solution to that. If Kai stays with us, well, he's one of the roster and will be an important player. And if he decides to left because he found an agreement with the club or whatever for his future, well, then we will think and we will put our energy on other players. So I think it's a little bit too soon to make a conclusion about Kai, but the only thing I can say is all the training sessions and the moments he has been training with us, he has been very professional, as the rest of the group.
So you're just midway through preseason. As you said, the roster's probably not done. You still have a lot of work to do, but give CF Montreal fans sort of an idea what you're saying to the group and what you're thinking about in terms of goals for this season. What do you believe is possible? What should be expected of this group in 2023 in MLS?
No, I believe that for many players, there is a lot progression. There is a lot to improve. And that's probably the biggest challenge of any technical staff on any club, is to make your players better. You have to improve them in all phases of the game. And even though they had a great season last year, there is still space for improvement. Of course, like you say, we expect to add a few pieces to the roster to have more possibilities to rotate and to have a lot more competitivity in the squad, which is very important. But the goal is the same goal for all 29 clubs in MLS, and that's to make the playoff.
It's going to be an exciting year. It was last year. I'm sure Montreal fans cannot wait to get back in the stadium and watch this team for the first time under head coach Hernan Losada. Hernan, we appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, great. Thanks for your time and hope to see you soon.
Well, that's the take from the man on the inside in Hernan Losada. Doyle, let's go to the odds, though. Fifth in the Eastern Conference after being one of the three best teams in Major League Soccer last year. A ton of turnover, though, a ton of movement, and obviously the coaching change as well. Where do you fall on CF Montreal right now?
It's still a playoff team, but I'm going to take under. Like, they are going to get a lot out of the kids, whether it's Saliba or Rea. I think that they are going to still have solidity because of guys like Wanyama, especially in Piet and the back line. And we both love the Aaron Herrera trade, but they lost a lot of talent. They lost a lot of talent. And I know they were able to do more than just tread water last year without Georgie, but losing your number 10 is tough. And then you add on Alistair Johnston and Ismael Kone on top of it. I think it's still a playoff team, but I don't see a top five finish happening for this side.
Yeah, the worry is they treaded water when Georgie was out because of Kone.
Right.
The one factor in all of that could be if Kyoto's healthy for the full year, which hasn't really happened, he was playing at a all-star level.
32 years old, you know, and he was like his best moments in Montreal have come as a center forward, right? Like he has not been the dynamic playmaker that he was in Houston.
He does create his own chances though as a center forward, which is a lot, which takes some of the need off of that 10 though. And that was a lot of it was when Georgie was out that Kyoto was really dangerous. I think he got a new contract at the end of last year. That felt like some of the, am I going to play because I don't know what my future is. So your hope would be he's locked down there, but then you add in the Kai Kamara stuff. Now Mason Toy's been starting in the preseason. Let's get hyped.
We both have a lot of Mason Toy stuff.
I have in our keeper nine league, I'm taking Mason Toy. I still have my Mason Toy stock from last year. So that's a lot of excitement as well. So you're going to go under on fifth. I think fifth's probably the line. I'm pretty high on this team. You said Herrera. I think George Campbell can actually bring them another element to the back line and make them better. They haven't fixed goalkeeper. We're going to talk about...
I like Pantemis more than you do, for what it's worth.
I'm okay with Pantemis over Brezza, and my hope would be Pantemis for a full year. The numbers show that a lot of the dips last year were because Brezza played so many minutes. Mm-hmm. And I'm also in favor of... If you're building an MLS roster and you have a homegrown goalkeeper who could be an MLS starter, you should keep him because that's pretty useful in your roster build. But the hope would be if you get him for the full year, some of the numbers bump up because we're going to talk about center backs in a second. XG against, they underperformed. Like they gave up more goals than was expected last year. And I think a lot of that goes to the goalkeeping issues for them. So I'm pretty high on them. I'm going to go under on this, but that isn't a knock. I think they'll be in the home game conversation for most of the season as we go along, if that's even a thing, which again, we're all going off the same athletic report, so we have no idea right now. So both of us kind of agreeing on that one. Let's dig into center backs because I just alluded to it like 37 times because I like Kamal Miller and I'm a fan of Kamal Miller. So we're doing center backs and then we're doing left and right wingers on this one. We have a list that I put together. So I'm going to read this list, and then you're going to say no right after I finish. So top five, I had Jakob Glesnes at one, Walker Zimmerman at two, Jaimar at three, Jack Elliott at four, and then I had Kamal Miller at five coming into this season. This wasn't, to me, one of the tougher ones in terms of quality as much as question marks. But I'm curious what you think first before I dig into that.
So... I mean, I would have Jack Elliott number one. I think he's just the best all-around center back in the league. I understand, like, even the union people don't rate Elliott over Glesnes, but like, I, from what I see in terms, especially because he's the one guy on this list who just gets on the ball and he will carry it into central midfield and he will compromise the other team's shape and then make a telling pass. So I would have Elliott number one. And the everything I just described is why I would have Robin Jansen in my top five as well. Like, he's even better at that aspect of it. Like, he's the best in the league at that aspect of the game. I don't have a ton of issues with that top five. Obviously, Walker Zimmerman still belongs there. Yeah, if Yamar plays the way he did against Al Ahly, then he'll be back in that discussion after, I think, having a pretty bad year last year. So I can't pick it apart too much. I like Kamal Miller a lot too. I think maybe not quite as much as Jansen, but it's like very, very close. If Miles Robinson gets healthy, he could push in. I already mentioned, like, Andres Reyes, if he plays 2,500 minutes, he's defender of the year caliber, but like, it's a massive if with him. I think
the other one, by the way, on the injury, cause that was with the question marks. Cause Janssen's one, right? Like, he's coming off of foot surgery. We don't know. Antonio Carlos is the other. Antonio Carlos has, for full seasons, I would argue, played an MLS defender of the year finalist level, but missed 4 to 5 months last year. I think those four or five are all players where I wouldn't be surprised if they're in it, but I can't put Miles Robinson in after not watching him play soccer for a full year.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I feel a little more comfortable with that, just because, you know, most guys recover fully from ACL tears, and there's no reason to think that Robinson won't.
Let me ask you about Miazga. We saw flashes last year. Do you think he should I have had him higher? Should he be in this conversation?
He should be in the conversation. You know, it wouldn't shock me if at the end of the year we're like, oh man, he was the defender of the year. But I don't think going into this season that I expect as much from him as from the guys on this list. The same goes for Aaron Long and Jesus Murillo in LAFC, like two very good MLS center backs, but I don't think there's a need to have them on top five. The interesting one will be Maksu, Andreas Maksu, the Danish international center back that Colorado just bought from Brøndby. A lot of people from around the league, you know, hitting me up saying that's a really, really good move. Like, that, you know, he was on our list. We didn't think the Rapids were going to be able to get him. So he's a guy who could come in right away and fix a lot of what went wrong for the Rapids last year. But in general, I don't have a problem with your top five. And I misspoke. I said torn ACL for Miles Robinson. It was torn Achilles.
It's going to be an interesting one. It's also a position.
I mean, we've seen Philadelphia Union owner Kevin Durant make a complete recovery from a torn Achilles.
Miles Robinson on the last year of his contract as well. So he's playing the full Kevin Durant game on this one. Is he in? Is he out? I know he's excited, though, for the season with Atlanta. There is a decent amount of money that was invested in not just Maxo, right? TFC brought in an international center back. Vancouver spent some money at center back. A few other clubs have made signings. So there's the question marks there as well. Could any of those players get themselves in? The one name I'm going to leave everyone with at the end of this one is Adelson Malanda at Charlotte, who is a 20-year-old French center back who was awesome last year immediately, which is not rare. It's unknown, unheard of for a player at that age, at that position, to come into MLS and hit the level. We expect Charlotte to be even better this year, even more cohesive.
Malanda reminded me of Jack Elliott.
Yeah.
Like very strong overlap in how they play the role and like their strengths and weaknesses. The difference, though, is like Malanda's 20, like he could still be bodied.
Yeah. And obviously for Charlotte, they are dealing with heartbreak in the club along the back line in Anton Walks, which I don't even know how to put into a sporting sense, and I'm not even going to try to. And that's obviously so much more going on for that club. Let's finish off the show with our wingers. We had five. We couldn't really do it, so we split it to left and right. Doyle, are you a lefty or a righty?
I'm a righty.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I mean, what, isn't 82% of the world righties or something like that?
I think it's probably more than that.
Oh, really? I thought it was like 18%. Maybe it's 8%. So we'll start at the right wing. This was the list we're coming in with here. Bernadeschi, number one. Facundo Torres, number two. Christian Espinoza, number three. Gabby Pereira, number four. Do we agree to that point?
I would flip Facu Torres and Gabby Pereira. I freaking love Gabby Pereira. Like he is, you know, best 11 caliber, you know, if you want a dark horse for me, and like sold for $15 million this time next year, caliber type of prospect, as far as I'm concerned. Not that Facu Torres isn't, not that Christian Espinoza isn't a best 11 potential. Like if Espinoza had 20 assists this year, it wouldn't shock me. But like, if you forced me to choose from those three, it would be Gabby Pereira for me. But like in general, I think Bernadeschi number one. Bernadeschi might be like MVP favorite going into this year. Bernadeschi number one, and then those three guys behind. I'm okay with that.
I'm fine on the Pereira one. It's more seeing it in MLS for a longer time. I actually had Espinoza number two. And I put Facu at two for you, I think. So I shouldn't have done that.
No, that was for Anders. Anders is borderline going to get a Facu Torres tattoo. God. He loves Facu Torres.
Espinoza low-key put up the best creation numbers over the last 2 years at winger, arguably, you know, top two or three in every category on one of the worst teams in MLS. So I'm pretty excited to see how it works for him.
And he has an elite number nine to,
exactly,
to pass. Like, and their games, like, there's a symbiotic relationship in their games. Like Espinoza is an amazing crosser, and Jeremy Abobasi is amazing in the air. So those two guys together, but also like Abobasi, as he got more reps playing as a center forward, his movement was sharper and better, and he seemed to work hand in hand with Espinoza, who wasn't just settling for crosses, even though, again, he's an incredible crosser. Like, he wasn't just settling for that. He was instead beating a guy and getting to the golden zone for pullbacks. So, like, I totally get it. Like, there's a good case to be made for that. I'm not there, but, like, I get it.
All right, let's talk the fifth spot here, because this was one of the tougher ones. We have
we haven't mentioned Carlos Vela. Yet.
No, we have a long list of names at five. I have Carlos Vela, straight up. Mm-hmm. He is not who he used to be. He is still one of the best chance creators in Major League Soccer, one of the best goal scorers in Major League Soccer. He is still a gravity effector. And when he's on, he is probably the best player on the field in any game he's in MLS. He's not on all the time or that often, but he is still that. And I would add, his team won two trophies last year, which he is somewhat a part of. Where do you fall on this fifth spot?
I think if you could put him in the El Seno role, he would be like, he would have another legendary season. But in terms of like, you need a right winger for 75 minutes a week, at least a week after week after week, I would not take Carlos Vela at this point over Paul Arriola or Christian Roldan or Jefferson Savarino, assuming that Savarino is going to play on the right and the new guy is going to play on the left. We don't know. But like, I would take those three guys over Carlos Vela at this point. I might take Johnny Russell still over Carlos Vela at right wing. Mm-hmm. So it's a real open question. And of all that group, if he's healthy, to me, it's Roldan.
Yeah. So I'm fine with that. I have literally, I put Roldan in my five and then in parentheses said, if he had been healthy last year.
Yeah.
Which he wasn't in Major League Soccer.
Yeah. But we saw in CCL, he was the best player. Other than maybe Stefan Fry, he was the best player in the CONCACAF Champions League. He led the CONCACAF Champions League in assists. You know, he made multiple high-level plays in the clinching win over Pumas. I think that's the real version of Christian Roldan, though, you know, asterisk is he came off in, what, the 75th minute against Al Ahly because they're already managing his minutes, which is not a great sign.
No, and you would assume a lot of that is blowback from last year, which was, well, we don't want to get ourselves in the hole
that
we
did.
So you're hoping they're overcorrecting, which they had attempted to do last year from past CCL teams, but it hadn't happened to them. But I think it's right, because I don't think the conversation is correct around Roldan, which is, if we in a vacuum ask people who the best wingers were, I don't think most people would say Christian Roldan, because they don't think of him as a winger, but he plays there. He's a game changer. He's a difference maker. And in this year, where Jordan's going to start on the left and Nuhu's going to start on the left, like, he is going to be a hub for that team at a quote unquote winger position, which we've already ruined all of that anyway, because none of these people actually play any of these positions in the same formations and whatnot. Let's go to left wing. Lorenzo Insigne, I don't know, for pure money at some point, he's number one. MVP favorite, Lewis Morgan, number two. I have Diego Fagundes, number three. Santi Moreno, number four. And just because we didn't see as much of him last year, I have Dennis Bouanga at number five.
Yeah, this one's tougher. It's a lot tougher, because Insigne was not great last year when he arrived. You know, we expect that to change in year two as there's more stability and more talent around him. But, you know, it's kind of like, could you talk me into Bouanga actually being the best of this group? You could, even though he struggled to put chances away.
And I think he's going to be on the preseason MVP shortlist.
It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
Martin Ojeda was so good in Argentina last year, and he has been unplayable so far in preseason for Orlando. Like, you could, like, we didn't even mention him. He could be on the list. We talked about Alan Velasco taking a step forward. Mm-hmm. He could be on the list. You know, Jordan Morris, I don't think is there anymore. But like, young guys like Dylan Barrero, Cade Cowell, the new Croatian kid that LAFC signed, Stipe Buke, I think is how you say his last name. Like, he was on the UEFA Golden Boy list. Like, this is not the type of signing that MLS teams could have made even 2 years ago. It feels more wide open than the right wing. I think on the right wing, we do have a good sense of who the top like 8-9 guys are. Mm-hmm. On the left wing, there's much more variability. And that even includes a guy like Diego Fagundes. Because Diego Fagundes, we were waiting for
him. I put him third.
Yeah. And like, I could see that. He was amazing last year. But we waited 10 years for him to have that season, and we've never seen him string two really good seasons in a row.
But I think he led the league from this position in crosses, in pullbacks, in chances created.
So I was talking about, you know, Reynoso's touch percentage in the final third. For Austin, it wasn't Driussi who led that team in final third touch percentage. Like, it didn't run through him. It actually ran more through Diego Fagundes. And I think that's a really good use of him, because he's so clever in his movement on that left wing, cutting inside. And then obviously he had, what, 15 assists. He can see the final pass, man. But again, we've never seen him put that kind of season together 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So even putting him, who is, you know, has 200 MLS games, even putting him in the top five feels like, yeah, I could see it, or it could go completely other direction.
So a few other names, and then we'll get out of here. I think we mentioned Jordan Morris, probably not pushing into that convo as much anymore. Cade Cowell, a ton of excitement, a ton of hope for the season. Dylan Barrero, I think, goes on that list as well. Daniel Shallowy took a step back last year. He's been up and down. This is normally his up year, as well as it feels like all the playmakers are back there. So he might have a really good year where he's getting in the spots he was 2 years ago and getting goals. The one name we didn't mention, I think we both agreed that we don't think he's going to play as a winger, is Talis Magno, who is a top five in his category talent. But it feels like with Tati gone and Eber gone now and the question marks, he will most likely be the center forward for NYCFC. I think
That's where he's been playing in preseason. Yeah. And then Thiago has been the left wing and Gabby Pereira the right wing.
Right. So that's why Talis Magno's not on this list. NYCFC fans, don't get upset. Yes, we think he's very good at soccer. We will get there.
I mean, I would have made a push to put him number one on this list if they were still playing him at left wing.
Yep. And I think that's pretty fair. All right. What you guys think
we got
wrong?
And he will be nowhere near the top five list for center forward.
100%, which I said he'll be five in what a category, I was like, well, he's not going to be five in that category. But Who knows? What did we get wrong? Who should be in our top five for the number nines coming up? We've got all your preview action coming as we go along. If you made it to this point, we appreciate you, and we know you'll be tuned in for the next one. We've got more team previews coming and more positional ones as well, because we are sickos, as some would say, as we get to this point. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Anders.
David,
thank
did you see the Knicks traded for Alex Caruso?
Don't lie to me. You're lying to me.
I'm completely lying to you.
Oh, completely I hate you so. I kind of, as you said my name, I was like.
They are, however, he's gonna give discussing. They're discussing a Zach LaVine trade.
No, they're not. That's not real.
They are. No, I'm dropping it into the chat right now.
Okay, we're going to take this offline. Appreciate all of you. Bye.